2 of that 590 show coming at you live right now on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com. Matt Berger, Matt Rocchio alongside Pablo Giamatti, a.k.a. John Rudolph behind the dials. Joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is a film critic for RealSpoilers.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. And, of course, download their podcast at RealSpoilers.com. Kevin Brackett, how are you?
Happy Friday, gentlemen. I'm good. How are you guys?
You sound so much better than you did last Friday. You don't sound like you're in your bat cave, so we're all good.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. If Eric from QC, if he's listening now or if he podcasts later, he's gonna be approving of the sound quality. So thank you for not being in the bathroom.
Oh, yes. I spent thousands and thousands of dollars upgrading my sound equipment just for this one moment.
So the big movie coming out today is The Dark Tower, based off the Stephen King. I think it was three books of the trilogy, correct?
This is based on 8 books from Stephen King.
Oh, it was 8 books. I just remember 3. I was a big Stephen King fan when I was a kid. And for some reason, I tried reading the Dark Tower, and I really couldn't get into it, but I know a lot of people that love it. It's starring Idris Elba, calm down, ladies, and then Matthew McConaughey, ladies, calm down again. And they are the two main characters in this movie. What were your thoughts of it?
Well, that's right. And the thing is that this is a very, very beloved property. And like I mentioned before, it's from the early 80s. These books, the first one called The Gunslinger, came out almost 35 years ago. So fans of the novels have been waiting and waiting for some kind of an adaptation to come to the big screen or the small screen. Ron Howard's been developing this for some time, and now he's working on a television show. So it's been a long time coming. And the problem is that they've taken material from 8 different books, and they've tried to, they've tried to cherry pick different elements to make this one movie, which is only about an hour and a half long. So you have to imagine, after all the buildup, imagine an epic series like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter, something that people have been reading for years and years and years, and to come out with finally a movie that's only an hour and a half long to try to encapsulate all these things. It's tough to do, and I think ultimately that's the problem, is it ends up a little bit of a mess. It tries to cram too much into one story, and instead of building the universe, like, for instance, I think our best example is the Marvel properties. You know, they started with Iron Man, and up slowly and look at the quality they have. So that's their biggest misstep, is just trying to cram too much into one product.
And basically what the plot is that there are multiple worlds and multiple universes, and they're all held together by this thing called the Dark Tower. And Idris Elba, he plays the last gunslinger, and he is sworn to protect the tower. And then Matthew McConaughey plays the bad guy, I guess you could say, for a lack of a better term. He's also the man in black, and he is trying to knock the tower down. Is that essentially what the premise is?
Yeah, so that's in a nutshell, that's what's going on. The Dark Tower is basically something that Stephen King has been working on, and is something that he loves. It's a property that he's written on and off whenever he feels the inspiration, and it's something that he, you know, holds very near and dear to his heart. So it's the most worked on property. You know, he doesn't do many sequels, and this is something that he's written 8 books about. So he has developed this shared universe. All of his books are connected, and he's using the Dark Tower as a thread that connects them all. So this is very important to not only this series, but if you're a fan of Stephen King, it kind of explains how all of his other books connect together. You know, that's a simple way of explaining it. And, yeah, the Dark Tower is something that the man in black, for whatever reason, we never really get a motivation in this movie. And that's another thing that really irks me. It's when the mustache-twirling villains are trying to accomplish some goal without ever explaining why. It seems like Matthew McConaughey, as the man in black, wants to take down the Dark Tower. We know that. But why does he want to? We know that if he takes it down, the world's going to be taken over. But he doesn't, once it's taken over by these demons from all these different universes, he never says why, he never says what he's going to accomplish, what he's, you know, so it's just silly. It just seems like he's being bad for the sake of being bad.
It's like, is the premise in The Dark Knight how, you know, some men can't be bargained with, you know, with money or anything like that, they just want to watch the world burn? You think it's just going to be, people are just going to accept that on the face value, that, hey, he just wants to knock down the Dark Tower and watch these demons take over because he just wants to see it happen? There's
yeah,
no
I
real
mean,
reason.
Definitely. Yeah, you could argue for that, but you know, his character, this man in black, who they never really explained who he is. His name is Walter, so he has a fairly normal name, but it seems like he might be the devil. He seems like he might be this just otherworldly person or this very, very old entity. They never really explain what he is, who he is, but he has magical abilities. He's able to control people's breathing. He can just basically wave his wave his hand and say stop breathing, almost like Darth Vader does. He just tells people to stop talking, stop breathing, and he has all these abilities, but we don't really know where he comes from. And I'm sure if you've read the 8 books, you get more insight into that. But again, the confusing thing is, going into this as just a movie viewer, is that you don't understand it, and they don't explain it enough for you to really get a grasp on the character. And the other thing is, if you are a reader of the books, supposedly this is not even, it's not a prequel, it's not a sequel, it's not a remake, it's not a reboot. It's very confusing where this lies, because it's like they're trying to get the best of both worlds. They don't want to make the book readers mad and adapt the material poorly, so they say, oh, this is set with the same characters and the same type of setting, but this isn't remaking the stories, you know, this is a different story. So it's like they want their cake and to eat it too, and what it ends up doing is it doesn't appease either the moviegoers or the book readers. So it's just a failure on all counts here.
McConaughey's character's name is Walter O'Dimm, which makes him one of the worst character names. It's right up there with Lewis Cipher in Angel Heart. I mean, like, yeah, we really can't see through that one at all. How was Idris Elba as the gunslinger, Roland Deschain? I know that Idris Elba, he's been in a lot of things that people have seen, but this is almost like his first kind of like real starring role where he's getting top billing, isn't it?
You know, Idris Elba is a fantastic actor.
I love him in The Wire.
Yeah, he's great. He's been around for a long time. I think over on the BBC, I think Luther was really where he shined, which American audiences may not be as familiar with that, but it's a great show. You should check it out. I believe there's 4 seasons of it. But yeah, the guy's a great actor. I think, wasn't he the pilot in Avatar, if I remember correctly?
He was in the Thor movies as well. He's been in a bunch of different movies where he's played kind of like smaller roles. So, I mean, when people see him, they're not going to be like, who's that guy? I mean, he's going to be a familiar face.
Absolutely. So yeah, he's been in some big movies. You're right. He is pretty much top billing in this film, but this is another problem, and I don't want to keep going back to this because I have the books and I've started reading them, but I haven't read very many of them. So I can't say I'm an avid reader of the Dark Tower series and I was disappointed. So I'm definitely more in the moviegoer, category, if you're going to, put me in one of those two. But what they did is they flipped the script, and the main character of this film is a kid named Jake, and he's in The Gunslinger, so he is a character from the original book. But Roland Deschain, the gunslinger, is supposed to be the main character, and what the filmmakers did is they made Jake the main character, and I think that's another one of the big mistakes, because Roland is this, amazing marksman. He is this awesome character who's just, taking everybody out with ease, and they describe in the books all these amazing scenes of him and his gunfighting, and you see a little bit of that in the movie, but you don't see much, and you mainly follow this kid, and it's a very cliche journey for the character. It starts off with Jake with these dreams. He dreams of the Dark Tower, he dreams of the Man in Black, and he also dreams of the gunslinger, and his parents don't believe him, and they think he's crazy, so they want to send him to a mental institution, and it's just, you can see every beat as it goes along what's going to happen in this story, and I just think that they would have done themselves more of a service and a service to the character and the source material if they would have just focused on Roland, because when Idris Elba gets to get his guns out, when he gets to have these weapons, which are supposed to be forged from the same material as Excalibur, you know, the King Arthur Excalibur, that's what these revolvers are made from. And he's supposed to be this amazing marksman, and we really only get a couple of decent action scenes. And, you know, for a movie based on a book called The Gunslinger, it just doesn't do it justice.
Yeah, why is everything right now going back to Excalibur? I mean, you had this movie, and then you had that bad Transformers movie that was, referenced back to Excalibur, and then you had that movie that Guy Ritchie made that completely bombed. Everything right now is going back to Excalibur. When suddenly is that back in fashion?
I know, it's funny. I mean, you're exactly right. I don't know why this year we're getting so much King Arthur mythology and references, but I know that it's a big part of these books. And again, these books are from the 80s, and that is a part of them. But you know, in the movie, they kind of mention it as a wink to the camera, and I think Matthew McConaughey's character is the one that ends up saying that on your Earth, I believe his weapons come from what you call Excalibur. You know, it's just one of those wink and nods to the camera. So they don't even really play it up that much, and it's supposed to be this amazing background and everything for the character and his weapons, and I just don't know. It didn't work for me as just a moviegoer, and so I think from what I'm hearing after the screening I went to, fans of the books were disappointed with how it played out. The moviegoers that had never read the book said that it was just okay and kind of lackluster. So I don't know what's going to happen to the rest of this franchise, because of course they want to make sequels and they are developing this TV series. So I don't know what the future holds for even the television series. If the movie, only making, I think they're estimating it might only make $18 million this weekend, which, you know, is a pretty lackluster opening. So I don't know. We'll have to see what happens for this one.
It's cool. I mean, it's not really up against much. I mean, you have Detroit, which has an 89% tomato meter reading on RottenTomatoes.com. But it seems like a lot of these movies that, you know, have, racial themes or something like that, it seems like they don't really do really well at the box office. You have Birth of a Nation. I don't think that one did extraordinarily well at the box office. Free State of Jones is another one, too. I know that Get Out did really well, but this is, based on historical facts. So I'm not sure exactly how that's going to do at the box office. I mean, maybe Dunkirk stays number one again for, 2 weeks in a row, 3 weeks in a row. That could very well happen. Otherwise, I would imagine it's going to make more money than the Emoji Movie or Girls Trip.
Yeah, that's a good question. Girls Trip is making a lot of money. That was the surprise, even though it didn't come in number one. It's had two very good weeks.
It had a budget of like $17 million, and it's made like triple that. So, I mean, it's made money. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad film. I'm just saying that it's not like a blockbuster that Dark Tower is going up against. It's not like it's a superhero movie or a big children's film.
No, you're right. And so I could see The Dark Tower coming out as number one because it doesn't have much competition. Detroit, like you said, it's more of a historical film. It's directed by Kathryn Bigelow, Oscar-winning Kathryn Bigelow.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She is. She's a great director. But people, I think, might see the subject matter as more of an eat-your-vegetables type of thing.
Yeah.
And even though it may get some critical acclaim, a lot of critical acclaim from what I'm hearing, but it may get awards. But if you're talking about a summer blockbuster, these are the last couple weeks of summer, and people are probably more likely to go see something about the gunslinger, not understanding what all the movie entails, but it's Idris Elba, it's these action sequences, Matthew McConaughey. So I could see it coming out number one, but I have a feeling that people are going to be disappointed when they, get out of the theaters.
Kevin Brackett joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett and download the Real Spoilers podcast at realspoilers.com. Last week when we had you on, we were talking about Clive Owen and how I think that Clive Owen could have made a pretty good James Bond. Idris Elba, I think he would have made another pretty good James Bond as well. He's a good-looking guy. He's suave. He's British. Now, the fact that he's African-American, I'm not sure how that's going to go over with the hardcore fans.
Were you not on Twitter the four different times that was suggested and Bond fans proceeded to freak the hell out?
Oh, Bond fans freaked the hell out when Daniel Craig was named because he's blonde.
That's been presented as him as Bond. I mean, literally ever since they announced the last of the Craig Bonds, everyone's been pushing for Idris, and every time people do,
they
there's
get pushed
a
back.
Huge reaction that you can't have it be a black guy, despite the fact that he's British and what have you. I agree with you, though. Man, it'd be fun.
I think it'd be fun. I think it'd be a good James Bond, either him or Clive Owen. Give it to either one of those.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, whenever, like you mentioned before, when Daniel Craig was saying he wasn't going to be James Bond anymore, Idris Elba was right up there, my number one pick. I would say Idris Elba, funny enough, for James Bond or Batman before Ben Affleck was casted. I wanted Idris Elba. I think he would have made a great Bruce Wayne.
You ready for this one? I think if you want to bring Idris Elba into a big blockbuster video, you do what, in my opinion, was the best form of this comic book character. You bring him in as the Green Lantern.
There you go.
Because, in my opinion, I didn't read a lot of comic books when I was a kid, but the only comic books I ever read was randomly, I got the first edition, or I got one of the first in the storyline of when it's that Green Lantern, when it's the African-American Green Lantern, and I was obsessed with it. I'm blanking on the name right now. But there's Idris Elba. Bring him into the next Justice League movie or whatever it is. And have him be the Green Lantern. I'd love
that. That Green Lantern movie with Ryan Reynolds was terrible.
We don't talk about that.
No, people have been calling for that for a long time, and John Stewart is the Green Lantern you're talking about, and
that's
he would be great. He'd be great in the role, but I think the problem is when you talk about Bond or you talk about Bruce Wayne or you talk about Green Lantern, it's his age, and the guy's an amazing actor. I'm not trying to put him down for any reason, but these trilogies and these universes that want to have 8 or 10 movies in them, they worry that once you get 10 movies in, let's say, or even 7 movies in, you might be 10 to 15 years down the road, and you know, what is he going to be able to stick with them, and how will he age? How will he appear on screen? And those are all the things they're considering.
That's unfortunate, because we might just have to be staring down the barrel of just accepting the fact that because of the fact that he grew up in England and just didn't get over to America with the big roles, we're just never going to get to really see Idris Elba play that one role that really embodies how great of an actor he truly is. It's kind of unfortunate, but I think we might be staring that down, at least when it comes to an action movie or something along those lines.
Well, you know, that's the same thing that I've always said about Christoph Waltz. And, you know, of course, he won the best supporting actor 2 years in a row. But, you know, look at the guy's age. And by the time he was winning those best supporting Oscars, he had, you know, already been over in Germany and making films for so long.
He's old.
Who's that?
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was 60. My God.
Idris Elba is 60?
No, Christoph Waltz
Christoph
is 60.
Waltz.
He looks like he's in his young 50s. I didn't expect him to be full on 60.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that he was discovered at this late in the game, just because he's such an amazing actor. But again, his age, you know, it's a factor in getting roles, and also just selfishly, how many movies that, you know, once he is good enough and winning these awards, the time that he has left to make, you know, there's only so much time in a day, right? So he can't make 4 movies a year, and certainly 4 really good movies a year. So he has to pick the roles sparingly and be smart about them. And so he's another one that I always think about. I wish that American audiences would have found him sooner.
You know what? We need to find, there's a story out there. There's a script in circulation right now that has, that's going to be a standalone film. And it's got a bad guy that Christoph Waltz would be perfect for, and it's got a good guy that Idris Elba would be perfect for. We get him in this movie, we make it happen.
Get on it, Bracket.
Yes. All right, on it.
It's so crazy when you think about Christoph Waltz, out before Inglourious Basterds, he was making German TV movies. And then he's like his first major American motion picture, he wins the Academy Award for Best Supporting.
And I think he could have been, I think the writing held him down a little bit in his villain role in that last James Bond movie. He was good, but I don't think he was nearly as menacing as he was in parts of Inglourious Basterds, or just as perfect of a character actor as he was in Django Unchained. I thought, good role for him. I'd like to see him as a villain again, but that one was a little bit hollow. Makes me really want to see Waltz as another bad guy.
Kevin Brackett, go ahead, sir.
Oh, no, I agree. I just, Inglourious Basterds, that was the first time that we were introduced, American audiences, to him, and that role is one of the most menacing and terrifying villains, with his soft-spoken lines and just the way he delivers everything. It really was incredible.
Yeah, and I just remembered, he's the first guy you see in that movie, because it opens up with the scene with him talking to the milk farmer. I completely forgot that was the first scene you see, and it's him. That is, that's one way to really get yourselves out to an American audience, scene.
And one thing that Tarantino does so well, almost maybe up there with like David Fincher, is making you like laugh when you're not supposed to be laughing. And in that scene, that opening scene in Inglourious Basterds, when he asks if he could smoke his pipe, and then he brings out that ridiculous, you know, wooden pipe that is just, you're kind of like, you're laughing, but you're like, this is a very uncomfortable moment. I really shouldn't be chuckling right now.
Yeah, that's Tarantino for sure.
There are
not many people that can do that. You think of people like Woody Allen, Quentin Tarantino, Kevin Smith. There's few writer-directors that can get you with that type of dialogue. And when it's matched with the perfect actor, it is just, it's just an amazing, amazing thing.
I was reading on Yahoo that James Vanderbeek, he's got a new series coming out on Facebook. It's on Viceland. And it's called What Would Diplo Do? And he's kind of doing the car wash now, doing all kinds of different interviews promoting the series. And I read this thing on Yahoo that after his role in Rules of Attraction, that he was so disturbed by that he had to go into therapy. And reading this, I didn't realize that the author of the book that the movie was based on, Rules of Attraction, is Bret Easton Ellis, the same guy who wrote American Psycho. And the character he played, Sean Bateman, is the younger brother of Patrick Bateman, who was in American Psycho. It was like, I was reading that, I'm like, this is amazing. I never thought that. I never put those two together.
Yeah, that's really cool. And that's a movie that I bet you a lot of people have not seen. But Rules of Attraction is incredible. It is such a good movie. And there's the art style. We talk a lot about movies. And that's definitely on the more art house, artistic type of film. But when you look at the visual style of that, and then I think around the same time period, we saw Requiem for a Dream. That was 2000, so yeah, a little earlier. But all those movies in that time period where you got those directors making the artsy films that were doing things that other films, you know, weren't, and you were seeing all this eye candy. And it's a good story and good acting and everything, but I always think of the visuals and how they're rewinding things and all that. They're in the party scene. And James Vanderbeek's really, really good in that. He's a good actor.
He's very creepy in it. Very creepy.
Yeah. He's not just Dawson's Creek. Like, that shows that he actually can act, so I would like to see him in more films.
And Shannon Sossamon, I thought that she was going to be a big star after that movie was over, because, I mean, she's a beautiful girl, you know, has a little bit of an exotic look. And I can't think of one thing that she was in after that movie.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how that happens sometimes, where you get these actors that have, you know, the looks or the just the abilities where you think they're going to become big stars and they don't. And then sometimes we get people that we see, it seems like, in every movie, and you're just kind of sick of them. And it's just strange how Hollywood works like that.
Well, I got you on the phone. I know that I'm way behind on this, but I finally got around to watching Ted 2, and I heard nothing but horrible things about Ted 2. And it did not get a very good tomato meter reading on RottenTomatoes.com, but I thought Ted 2 was pretty damn funny. I laughed a lot throughout the entire film. It wasn't as good as the first, but I thought it was good. What was your opinion of it?
Finally, something we can agree on, Matt.
All right. It only took us how many months, Kevin Brackett, to finally agree on a film?
Right. No, I think Ted 2 is really funny. I don't know why critics were so hard on it. You're right. The first one was really, really funny, and Ted 2 may not, you know, live up to the expectations we had for it, but it still was a really, really funny film, and I enjoyed it. I was laughing out loud throughout the whole thing, too.
I think my favorite scene is when they celebrate by going to the improv and watching the improv and just shouting out depressing things. like inappropriate, depressing things. Like, give us a date, September 11th, 2001. No, not that one. Well, okay, well, give us a place. Ferguson, Missouri. Give us a person. Yeah. Bill Cosby. I mean, just, I was laughing hysterically throughout a lot of that movie. Kevin Brackett, thank you so much for making time for us this evening. Enjoy the rest of your night. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Sounds great. Thank you very much, you guys. Take care.
Thanks, Kevin. That is Kevin Brackett from RealSpoilers.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. Let's take a commercial break. Coming up next, the final segment of the night, final segment of the week, right here on That 590 Show, 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.